Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest the Republican candidate for Attorney General, State Senator Dawson Hodgson of North Kingstown. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, everybody.
Let's start off with some questions for our guest. Dawson, as we know, former House Speaker Gordon Fox is putting his Eastside house up for sale. There are indications that his taxes and campaign contributions are being examined by law enforcement. What conclusions do you draw about this case?
Well, Ian, it's once again, the leadership culture of the state of Rhode Island is placed in the spotlight, and we don't look good. It's a very unfortunate circumstance for the state, but we are lucky that somebody is willing to police it. The real surprising thing to me, however, has been the reaction to it at the State House, where once Gordon Fox was the most powerful man in the state of Rhode Island. If you walk around the State House right now, I think you might get some legislators saying, Gordon who?
And just a brief follow-up, no one has been charged in this matter as of yet. Do you think this is restricted only to Gordon Fox, or is it your inference that there's more to this?
If this is consistent with patterns of previous law enforcement investigations, the inquiry will be going up the ladder, down the ladder, and sideways. They will be looking for anybody who has been engaged in wrongdoing, especially if it involves violation of the public trust.
Let's go to Maureen.
We've been following the actions of the legislative committee now that the new leadership is in place as far as 38 Studios is concerned. A, how do you think they're doing? And B, would you support the idea that these legislators should be granted subpoena power?
Well, Maureen, they have subpoena power. The oversight committees of both chambers have had subpoena power under the House and Senate rules for a very long time.
But what we've been missing is the using it.
Oh, absolutely. It's unconscionable that it hasn't been used thus far, that the principal actors in the 38 Studios scandal have not been put under oath before the Rhode Island public. We're approaching the second election since this scandal broke, and still the public doesn't have answers to make informed decisions about how they choose their leaders and who is involved in this business.
Let's go to Scott.
You're running for attorney general. We have an attorney general. He has veteran prosecutors. Why should we throw Peter Kilmartin out? I mean, you're running against an incumbent. You're going to have to make that case.
The last time I saw Speaker Gordon Fox, he was walking into a political fundraiser with his arm around Peter Kilmartin. That's not going to be the policeman who is going to clean up Rhode Island's political culture. The economy of this state is never going to get better until we improve our reputation. That means policing our political culture and making sure everybody knows that all citizens are held equally accountable. You just can't have a legislative political insider holding that function. No one's going to be confident he's going to
do it. Well, again, you're a legislator.
Scott, I've been in the General Assembly for 4 years, and I think members of this panel are familiar with my reputation. I would hardly describe myself as an insider. I think I've been in the Senate long enough for people to understand my perspective and that I'm not one of them.
The commission in charge of redeveloping former I-195 land in Providence has voted to keep confidential proposals for redeveloping the land. The Projo reports that only the proposals that are accepted to go forward will be made public. Dawson, what do you think about this? Is this level of confidentiality the right thing?
No, Ian, I don't think so. I don't think it's consistent with the cultural change that Rhode Island needs from its government right now. Decision after decision that has been made behind closed doors and hidden from public view, like 38 Studios, has cost us dearly. And because this is a public project, I think the commission should disclose the bidders and the key components of these proposals, such as project labor agreements, in advance.
What do you say, Scott?
Well, I think the most interesting thing here is for them not to rush into just giving this very valuable land to the first person who walks in. And the thing I always point to is Newport. After the Navy moved out, Newport made some very bad decisions downtown. Anybody who walked into Newport and was willing to put money in that waterfront, they went along with it. And the problem is they don't have parking in Newport. They never built a parking garage. There are some pretty good safeguards in the 195 land. First of all, you can't have surface parking. You have to build a garage. Secondly, you can't have a casino. The other thing is you can't land bank and hold onto this land and speculate with it. So I wish there was some more public disclosure. But on the other hand, I really hope that there isn't this clamor just because our state's economy is hurting that we just take the first person who walks in with a lot of money.
Maureen, is keeping confidential the proposals that are not accepted consistent with the public interest?
I think we have to be very careful, and I think it might be. I mean, we have to worry about the fact that initially there wasn't a lot of interest in terms of proposals, that there's credible reasons why certain developers have some proprietary and financial information that they want to hold back. We want to have people subsequently put in proposals. We have the example of India Point Park, where there was full disclosure. They let out all the information. They got one bid, and we're still looking at an undeveloped piece. So I
somebody developed shooters, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So I think we have to be really careful here. And, you know, I'm all for clean government. I'm all for exposure. But let's not take it over the top and do ourselves some damage.
It's only April, and we already had one day this week in which each of the three major Democratic gubernatorial candidates had competing news conferences. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, Alan Fung and Ken Block are continuing to slug it out. Dawson, who are you supporting for governor as a Republican?
I'm supporting Alan Fung in the primary, and I will support the Republican nominee for governor.
And why are you supporting Fung in the primary?
Mayor Fung came to me and asked for my support early on in his exploratory process. His record in Cranston of leading a municipality through a very challenging fiscal environment, I think, is something that is going to really benefit the state. I'm also impressed with Ken Block. I was in his previous election, and I think the Republicans are going to be well represented no matter who proceeds through.
Maureen, with the gubernatorial candidates rolling out a lot of policy proposals, how much of this will permeate the consciousness of voters with months still to go in the election?
Well, I think it lets us know what they're about. And there's kind of a collective message here in the sense that no one's talking about raising taxes. Everyone's talking about investing, investing, investing. The idea of how they're going to pay for this is a little thin. But I expect as the campaigns proceed, we'll get a little more information there. I mean, it's early in the campaign. We're now going to get some of the meat on the bones. But I think, you know, they're off to a good start and we'll see what happens.
Scott, Clay Pell offered his economic plan this week. It was his first policy proposal, and his campaign had had some stumbles for a while. Do you see him having a better path going forward after this?
Well, I think obviously what he wants to do is put the frittata over his car behind him and start talking about the state's real issues. And so, you know, he's made a good start at that. I think he wants to be perceived as someone who's not part of the political culture here, that he's an outsider. The same as a senator here has just mentioned in the attorney general's race. And I think he wants to be viewed as somebody who's young and has new ideas. That said, I find the Republican primary very interesting. Block may be a very good primary candidate, but I think Alan Fung really is the best general election competitor on that side.
Moody's Investors Service this week issued a warning about the potential economic fallout of the state pension conflict. Dawson, obviously you don't have to be a rocket scientist or even Moody's Investors Service to realize the stakes are high here, but how do you see the outlook for preserving the pension overhaul from 2011?
You're right. On one hand, the Moody's statement is a statement of the obvious. Without structural reform, our public employee retirement system, of the public employees retirement system, the state of Rhode Island faced financial devastation. That's why we passed the Retirement Security Act in 2011. But in my opinion, the negative editorial focus that's come from the Providence Journal and from Bob Walsh and the NEA towards the police unions that voted to reject that contract are missing the entire point. You know, these reforms that were made in the fiscal emergency were either an exercise of the legislature's constitutional authority to react to circumstances in their governance, or it wasn't. That's not subject to settlement or mediation, because no matter what the outcome of this settlement, you can't bind a future legislature, nor can you bind future litigants who may take issue with pension reform and the ability to do that.
There are two actual aspects to this. And certainly what we want to say is it's not only a question of is it a contract and does the legislature have the right to do this? But the other thing is the compelling state interest. And certainly the Moody's report leans heavily on the idea that this is a compelling state interest. My hope is, as yours, is we have to decide the first question. But even if it's the decision is based on the second question, I don't see how the judge can argue that there isn't a compelling state interest given this kind of a report.
How about that, Scott? Will the compelling state interest argument be the saving grace for the state as this eventually moves to the Supreme Court?
Well, you really don't know, which is why I think it was very bad that the settlement fell apart. I'd like to ask the senator, if you're a lawyer and you're going into litigation, high stakes litigation, and you know you've got a settlement that gives you 95% of what you want, do you really want to try that case?
As an attorney representing a routine contract matter, the pragmatic answer is no. And as a legislator, I might have adopted the terms of that settlement. However, any litigant can bring those challenges again and the question is not answered. And all of a sudden, that settlement isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
Well, that's not true. I think the courts would not see it that way.
We're out of time, so we have to hold the conversation there for now. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Thank you.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And Republican candidate for Attorney General Dawson Hodgson.
Have a great day, Rhode Island.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.